listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 262 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week it's just a general catch-up episode to find out what the heck everyone's been up to while trying to figure out how to interpret what lockdown means. That's as much as what I'm going to say on that subject at the moment. It is a contentious subject in this nation.
I thought he was going to say in his household for a second there. I was like, well, it's not, I mean, we're pretty much in agreement most of the time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, doesn't lockdown mean you can drive anywhere so long as you're displaying symptoms of coronavirus?
And use driving as a means to test your vision. Perhaps. However, yeah. Other than watching anything to do with terrible current events news, happen to do other things.
Can I just say that this is the perfect marketing experience for Specsavers? If they do not capitalize on this.
There was an excellent BrewDog thing I saw earlier. Did you see it?
No, do tell.
Yeah, from BrewDog James, just sent a case of this beer to number 10 Downing Street with a note that it is best enjoyed in rose gardens while discussing all the latest comings and goings. I hope the beer gets to Boris Johnson. You can get some here.
I was going to bring this back slightly though to the actual fact that this is a Nerds Assemble podcast and we're nerdy. Twitter wouldn't allow like Dominic Cummings' name with the surname to trend because it is a rude word in many circles.
Well, did you see the hashtag over the weekend for it?
No, I did not.
Cumgate.
Oh, no.
Okay. I want to take this
That's
away from
even
that.
Counting, we're losing people.
We should just talk about what we've been doing that has nothing to do with current affairs. It is very much away from all of this. I say away from current affairs. We did watch at least one documentary in the past week. I'm trying to remember what the subtitle for it was. So, who remembers Super Size Me, the documentary with Morgan Spurlock from the early noughts?
Yep.
So, it turns out last year he had a sequel come out, which was Super Size Me 2, Holy Chicken. Actually, it says 2017 on there, but then Amazon Prime said 2019, so that's really confusing.
Yeah, I think Google's wrong, because in the actual documentary itself had a bit about like chickens, X many years ago versus the chickens today, which was 2019.
Okay, so Google's actually wrong. There you go, don't trust the internet.
Oh my god, no, surely not.
Yeah, so why did they say 2017? Initial release 2017. Maybe they did one level of release and then released it further, release date. Oh yeah, so they did something else with it in 2019. So maybe they did
a special edition.
Or like a preliminary, like maybe the previous one was a preliminary thing. Anyway, so we watched Super Size Me 2. It was an alarming look at the chicken and fast food industries in America. Okay, it was for date night. I'll admit we watched this as like a, we just ended up with a two-part date night. Okay, so it initially had a release at the Toronto International Film Festival in 2017.
Right, so they must have added in like
content. Yeah. Post that. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Hashtag content.
So we watched it and it's like, obviously, Morgan Spurlock can supersize me. Like, he ate McDonald's for, what was it, like a month? Every meal was McDonald's. And looked, obviously, like the very terrible health side effects that came from having such an atrocious diet, but also looking at just, like, how much eating patterns in the US involve junk food and fast food and stuff.
I think you mean how much success from freedom.
Maybe. And then this one looked at the sequel, where you supersized me to Holy Chicken, looked at specifically the growing interest, at least in America, for fast food that involves chicken. So like, as they call it, crispy chicken, but basically fried chicken in any which way form with breaded shit and stuff that you can get between two pieces of some kind of bread. And he like tries to launch his own like fast food chain that of grilled chicken, fried chicken stuff that like has the truth about how this food is made and the issues with supply chain, especially stuff to do with not just animal welfare, which of course it's appalling because it's America, but also the treatment of farmers at the hands of
Big Chicken.
As in the big corporates that own a huge chunk of the supply chain for chicken in the US.
That's the thing, it's the supply chain. It's not even just like the people that are buying the chickens. Yeah. It's people that are actually giving farmers the means to create chickens.
In order to then sell to, they're not even the ones directly selling to fast food retailers. They're being forced, basically they're almost completely controlled and stuff. That was...
And, I mean, did you say about the fact that they kind of pay farmers on a ranking system?
But look, there's no point going into too much detail, because what I want is people to go watch this on Amazon Prime or another service, if you can find it, or maybe David.
I just thought it was like an interesting point to say.
No, I don't want us to go into that much. It's something that's like the equivalent of a spoiler for a documentary, if you don't know that already. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And then we also watched the film last night of Life of the Party, which is a Melissa McCarthy film about a lady who suddenly finds herself being divorced unexpectedly by her dick husband, and how she copes with this by re-enrolling in college to finish her final year she never completed. Also at the same college where her daughter's studying.
It's basically a case of almost like Arrested Development. So she was got pregnant in university, obviously college in America, had to drop out because of that, you know, raised the kid and, you know, had normal, regular...
relationship.
You know, nuclear family kind of going on, and then suddenly bombshell, all of that pretty much taken away.
Yeah. I know that for a lot of people, mostly men, that Melissa McCarthy is very much a hate it situation, but actually I thought she was really good in this film. I found it genuinely funny and heartwarming at times.
Also has was it Gillian Jacobs in from Community?
Yes.
Who plays Britta.
And Thingy, who was her best friend. Not Britta's best friend, but Melissa McCarthy's character's best friend.
Oh, Maya Rudolph. Yeah, she's been in loads of stuff, including The Good Place as the judge and stuff like Bridesmaids and whatnot.
That's also on Amazon Prime. As you can see, our date night consisted of Amazon Prime. Fast night. And fast food, admittedly. But at least it's British.
Well, I mean, we literally had fast food and then watched a documentary on fast food.
Yeah. The only thing we can consider is that the animal welfare would have been better.
What, in the UK?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I fucking hope so.
Yeah, so there was that. Retroid, is there anything you've been up to?
Well, I've been continuing my rewatch of Mr. Robot.
What season are you on?
Midway through season 3.
Oh, you are massively ahead of me, because I haven't even managed to make it through the end of season 2, let alone the midpoint.
Oh, then I will say no more.
You say that, is it any good? Does it? Because I was really finding season 2 a bit of a slog. I think I've tried to watch it twice.
I'm trying to think of a way to ask you at what point you you are in season two without spoilering something.
Do you remember the last thing that happened?
Somebody ended up very dead at the home where their very blind mum lived.
Oh, that's quite early on.
Yeah. And I kind of gave up. I mean, I'm probably going to go back to it at some point, but I've kind of got to the point where I might end up having to rewatch season one and then go on to season two.
Well, you know how there was a big reveal right near the end of season one, which kind of cast everything that you'd watched in season one in a different light?
Yes.
Season two does something very similar. Mm. Not as fundamentally, oh God, about it, but yeah, it does pull something. So yeah, there's something going on, and it is fundamental about what I said. I think the last time I mentioned it, where you know, we've said before about unreliable narrators.
Yes.
And, of course, someone who has, well, at the very best, a fractured mind is fundamentally unreliable when it comes to, you know, things. But I do like the way in Mr. Robot it does involve the viewer. Because Elliot does, you know, address the viewer.
Yeah.
As kind of an aspect of himself. So, yeah, it kind of plays to that. Because at the start of season two, he doesn't know really who to trust. Yeah, it is good. I would definitely recommend it. And it is definitely one where when you have the whole thing before you, it is... I'm enjoying it much more. I you know, I liked it the first time, but of course, when you're watching something in a season and then a long wait, and then a season, and then a long wait, because I binged the seasons when when they've been on. But yeah, it works better when you can continue on. And I have had a few nights where I've wanted to go to sleep earlier, but the temptation for another. Mr. Robot.
Just you'd be like, oh, why not have one more sort of?
Yes, yeah, and the unexpected. Yeah, there's at least two unexpected things that happen in season two, but I'm not going to spoil them.
Okay.
But it's a clever way of dealing with. What is Elliot's reality and what the other aspects of him may want or require to do for or to
him. So are you saying that it's definitely worth sticking through season two, though, to also then get onto season three?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if there's a fundamental shift like there is in the first two seasons. In season three, I don't think there is.
Mm.
Other than you find out exactly what not exactly, because it never does that. But characters may have different ideas, and you find out more of what Dark Army are doing with Evil Corp.
Mm. Okay.
I have been watching other stuff, however.
Oh, yeah.
I've been. I was sort of pointed towards this by my sister-in-law, who, my youngest sister-in-law. She's going through a bit of an Asian TV bent. And I was not aware of this series, but there's a 50 episode series on Netflix.
Is it The Untamed? Chinese,
Yes, it is.
Okay, so this is where I have to stop you right now, because
on
tags that I have got, you can, on Tumblr, you can sort of tell it to filter out certain tags from posts so that you don't see those posts. The Untamed is on that list.
Oh, go on.
Because so many of my Supernatural fandom pals, who've obviously, I don't know, that they're not so keen on sticking around as the season's winding up, have switched to the Untamed. And
because
it's just
something big you can binge.
And it's just so fucking constant, the goddamn posts about it. And it's just like, I got sick of it. I was just like, I like you guys. And I want to know, because they post personal stuff as well sometimes. Yeah. I want to keep following you. But God, I am blocking the Untamed tag now because I've had enough.
That's fair, because apparently, in certain circles, it's been a near constant. No, you must watch Untamed and blah blah blah. And it was, I have not heard of this thing. What is this pop music and rock and roll that the youngsters are discussing these days?
The two main male characters, though, like as far as I can tell, everyone and their dog wants to ship them together because it doesn't go far enough as making them queer because it's Chinese media. But obviously, like the foundations are there.
Dogs want
to. It is so damn. Yeah. Obvious. There are so many longing looks and side glances, and there's one character who doesn't allow anyone to touch him, but this, you know, the other male character who, you know, hangs around with him, does things like, you know, cast a spell to keep him within 4 meters, you know, with like a, you know, a little magical rope, and you know there are things like that. And it's just the, you know, if, you know, it basically, the fact that the X-Files had fans who were shipping, you know, Mulder and Scully together based on jack shit.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's also I have seen some of X-Files fandom. Mulder and Krycek.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, it's just, yeah, based on that, with, you know, as an example, you know, with X-Files, where the fans have gone, oh, there's such chemistry, and I'm going, they talk, and she thinks he's a dick, and that's what you're basing it on. But yeah, this is, if one of the characters was female and everything else was exactly the same, it would be being sold as a big, you know, romance.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is. But, yeah, it's quite cool in that it's got a lot of things which, I can see as... I haven't seen that much, Chinese mythology TV, but there are certain character tropes and there are certain things that crop up. But it's got, quite decent CG a lot of the time.
Can I give you more dirt on The Untamed?
Oh,
two things. So one, as far as I can tell, The Untamed fandom, or at least part of it, which includes, I believe, real person fanfic between the two main cast, helped maybe push, due to an anti- that shipping situation led to AO3 really getting in the crosshairs of China's censorship bodies and leading to AO3 being banned earlier this year in China.
I had heard that, and I've also heard that some of the actors have had to apologize for people misconstruing
So there's that dirt with The Untamed. And then the other dirt is, as far as I can tell, and this has happened over lockdown, China's now put in new regulations and laws around the length of TV series produced in the country, because the authorities there are apparently seemingly sick of 50-episode series. And basically having like one long season kind of thing that's just like, because they think it's leading to really shit TV. So basically, you wouldn't get another Untamed made in its current format. You might be able to get, like, if there's a proper space in between stuff with, like, seasons. But that it seems that, I mean, while the Untamed is obviously very good compared to perhaps a lot of other shows that might be coming out of China.
Yeah.
It's the exception, and the trend is to make lots of shows that are like that and just dump them. And the Chinese authorities are actually apparently sick of low quality television and have actually decided to rule on it, saying no more.
Stop that, you.
Yeah, so there will be changes in forthcoming TV production cycles for China as a result.
I mean, I can definitely see the angle, because, you know, I'm watching this and we're up to about episode 13.
And it's how many episodes?
50.
I say that, but then, like, some anime, I mean, how many episodes has some anime got up to, which is obviously Japanese?
Oh,
but
I've got animes which are like 200 episodes.
Yeah, but is that for a single season? Because some still get split into seasons.
No.
Mm.
I'm talking episodes in total.
Because I think something like Sailor Moon must have been maybe something like 30 episodes, but then Neon Genesis Evangelion was like 26 sans the overs.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but the China, yeah, it's just, so yeah. Are you sick of it yet? 13 episodes in. How long are the episodes?
They are about 42 minutes. I mean, you know, the general gist of the storyline that I've established so far, you know, for anyone, is there are these, you know, clans from different parts of, you know, China, although it's never specified, you know, for sure, about. And they all have their particular talents or, you know, like magic.
Mm.
And, you know, there's some rivalry and everything, but there's the Wen clan, who is the extremely, yeah, they are the evils. You know, it's just, they're right there. You know, they wear red and black. Their lair is in the middle of a volcanic eruption in a place called the Nightless City. And they are trying to reunite four chunks of this magical talisman, which will, you know, give them the power to, you know, unite the clans under their control. So, you know, you can see that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of true up stuff. And but, you know, to be fair, the locations are very nice. The costumes are very nice. The effects are often not shite. So I'll give them that. Although the most recent bit of the story, where several members of the clans have had to go for indoctrination, with the Wen clan, and they've had their magical swords confiscated. So, you know, they're sent down into a pit to investigate a monster which is terrorizing people in the area, and it is, I kid you not, the Tortoise of Slaughter.
Okay.
And it led to my sister-in-law singing, bring your tortoise to the slaughter.
Well.
Because, yeah, it's just, oh dear. But it's a bit big, and it's in a cave, and they don't have any weapons, and you know, things go a little bit bad for the Wen clan, who's got his guards down there, and they sort of lose track of each other, and there's a big fight. But yeah, one of the main characters gets injured, and the other one has to tend to his wounds. You can almost hear the tappity tapping of keyboards. From here, can you?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good series. It is something different. And I am absolutely sure that if I'd watched so many you know, Chinese faux historical dramas, I would probably be a bit sick of, you know, some of the aspects of it. But yeah, it's the shipping forecast is strong and heavy.
I think this, like, because there was, was it Guardians? Or The Guardian? One or T'other, which is another Chinese series that was out before The Untamed, but hadn't had a Netflix release, and that had quite the following. And then this obviously came out, and obviously big Netflix release, and, like, I think it's got twice the noise. Like, everyone that I saw that was early on with Guardians has now switched over to Untamed, but then people who weren't even talking Guardians are now talking Untamed on my, like, fandom stuff, and it's just like, okay, guys, cool. Cool. But, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's awesome, but I've said before that, you know, there's Korean dramas. That's Kingdom, which was the Korean series, sort of, you know, if you say historical Korean zombies, it's not half of it, but it covers the basics. And that's an example of something that, you know, I would never have seen otherwise. Because I remember when I was a kid, there were some things on, you know, TV, and, you know, two Japanese series, which were dubbed badly into English, and that was part of the appeal, I think, because it was at the early 1980s, so let's have some slight casual racism. Monkey and The Water Margin, which was a Japanese TV series about Chinese history. It wasn't, you know, like, well, I don't think it was bad, but I don't know.
I think bad's not necessarily the issue. The issue is inaccurate.
Yeah, but I know it. I get the feeling that it was a little bit like, you know, the BBC doing Versailles.
Okay.
So, you know, it wasn't, you know, like, let's have a go at, you know, the Chinese. It was, I think it was kind of Legend of the, you know, the Three Kingdoms.
Okay.
You know, that kind of period.
Mm.
Which, of course, we know absolute jack shit about.
Yeah.
Of here. But, yeah, it's good to see dramas from different countries, and then of course when you see more and more of them, you find out, oh yeah, there's certain you know, things that you keep seeing you know, trotted out,
tropey tropes.
It's a bit like, you know, oh I really like American sci-fi, and then finding out that, you know, the only things you get are you know, the Star Treks in Orville and Andromeda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, oh yeah, I'm noticing something here. Okay, right. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm gonna move us on. I'm gonna take us to a different medium of television and talk about two animated shows that we've been kicking back with. So Rick and Morty season? Is it
four
is back on air in both the US and the UK, with the UK being like 4 days behind the US broadcast. So it's broadcast on a Sunday in the US on Adult Swim, and then it ends up on E4 on a Thursday evening. So there's like a 4 day gap. Season four has overall, I mean, we're a couple of episodes in after a break, continues to be very self-aware. Continues to shock with certain storylines. I say shock. There's definitely been, I think, continued to be digs at certain aspects of its own fandom and just media culture in general.
I've heard a few references to a very meta episode with like a secular train or something.
Yeah, that was like that was the first episode after the break. That was out. Yeah.
I have only watched what's been on Netflix. So I presume that's three seasons.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen with once E4's finished showing it, whether or not it's going to wind up on Netflix, because some of the stuff that E4 shows does kind of do that. It would be nice to watch it all in one go, for certain. So, yeah. Oh, what was it? I feel like there was... No, because I'm thinking about... I think one of the episodes which... If you've seen some of the social media posts asking for people to guest on our episode coming up for 263, where we look at fandom, copyright, and original fiction. You know, the dragons, that there was an episode involving dragons.
There were multiple.
Yeah, that definitely went off of fandom tropes. Yeah. Fandom tropes that may or may not have been partially influenced by, was it Anne McCaffrey's? Dragon stuff, but certainly are very much tropes in fanfic these days, and then certain original fiction that's originated from fanfic. Anyway, so Rick and Morty season 4 continues to be meta on numerous levels and derisive towards certain fans. Meanwhile, also on E4 at the moment, and certainly you can catch up with all of this second one on E4, Harley Quinn animated series.
Yeah. I have heard positives about that, but I don't know.
It is really freaking fun. It is crazy. But it takes the characters in ways that I don't know if it's based on any particular issues of like non-main sort of timeline or story comics from DC. But it certainly looks at aspects of Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. That are kind of like, you always wondered if there was going on with the characters, and it is. I mean, the big thing about Harley Quinn is that basically, like the movie that came out recently, the Birds of Prey movie, she dumps Joker.
Yeah.
And tries to get on with her life, to varying degrees of success. As basically investigating.
When you say got on with her life, she's still a villain.
She's still a villain, but like more anti-hero and with a bit of villain going on these days. But still with some villain, but then with a tad touch of anti-hero. And yeah, there's just some really biting commentary on DC comic book characters and just life. Especially life as a woman, that's like, oh no, yes, I do identify with that, even though you're still like a weird, like freakish looking villain who wields a massive hammer at times.
I think it kind of reminded me of the movies of DC. I mean, admittedly, I'm more familiar with those than I am, you know, the actual comics.
Well, I mean, certainly the Harley Quinn that's in this animated series is very different from the Harley Quinn that's in Batman the Animated Series from the 90s.
Yeah. But also, like a bit like the latest Harley Quinn film where, you that's know, obviously pretty. They split and, you know, there's bad feelings and, you know, she's feeling hurt and whatnot. Obviously, that kind of comes in the first couple of episodes. But even their portrayal of Bane, I'm pretty sure, was a nod to Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight Rises. Like, with the voice and everything.
That's true. He does that because it's definitely not... what do I want to say? Bane is definitely not like... Oh, sorry. Bane is definitely not like the Bane that you find in the... Oh, which one is it? Batman Forever? Because that's the Poison Ivy Batman.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, wait, no, it's Batman Returns she's in. Is it Batman Returns? No, wait. Okay. 90s Batman films. Batman Forever was the one with Two-Face and the Riddler.
Yeah.
And then what was the one? Batman and Robin. Mm. Batman Returns is the sequel with the
God, they were so bad.
In the '80s to what's his face director who I really get sick of.
Joel Schumacher.
No, '80s Batman. Gotham.
Tim Burton.
Yeah. So Batman Returns. So Batman Returns is Tim Burton. Schumacher is Forever and Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I was just I was just stuck on how bad those were.
Yeah. So the Bane and Poison, so it's not at all, so the Bane in the animated series is, like Paul says, more like the Nolan Bane and nothing like the Schumacher Bane from Batman and Robin. There we go.
And I kind of feel like the Riddler is more kind of the Riddler from like Arkham City and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, that could just be, you know.
I would say, having read probably more DC Batman comics than yourself, and though it has been a while, I'd say they're definitely following more a vein of like recent comics kind of stuff, with an edging of around the films as well. So, but I mean,
since like the entire medium is pretty much like comics, kind of created or the basis for like films and TV series and games, and those have in turn influenced the comics, you know, a bit like with Marvel as well. Mm. How, you know, there's a certain kind of couple of aesthetics and
feedback loops
that has kind of made the comics to be like, oh well, actually we're gonna follow on from the look of the popular stuff.
So I recommend it. I don't know if all of it's available at the moment on E4. I think this week that we're recording, so the week of the 27th today. So I think
it's the 22nd of March.
Oh yeah, and there's plenty of like F-bombs and stuff, so
yeah, don't watch it. It's not for kids.
It's very much not for kids.
I was going to say, speaking of, actually, nothing else on our list that we've pre-written to remind ourselves what we've been up to has F-bombs in it.
Are you looking for a segue?
Yeah, I failed. But you know what? I've been rewatching Supernatural still. I just finished rewatching season 4. Hell has opened. Lucifer is out.
Hello.
Woo! On to season 5 next.
Again.
How many times has it been?
Actually, I haven't done a full rewatch successfully since season 10 came out. So I haven't actually done a full rewatch of everything in a while. CW is hopeful that Supernatural will be back in the fall. I think that partially depends on whether or not Canada allows people to go there to work, because there's a whole border issue with, you know, everything and shit. And the ongoing saga of TV production trying to pick back up along with film production in light of current events.
But considering presumably Texas Walker Ranger, like Texas Ranger Walker,
that's happening next year now because of.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Are they rebooting that?
Yes, with Jared Padalecki as Walker. So I'm watching it, obviously.
Because obviously.
I would not watch original because of
Chuck Norris
being an unpleasant individual.
A Massive Bell End, I believe, is the...
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. One interesting is that with season 4 of Supernatural, well, the conclusion of the season finale of that, which is where terrible shit happens, the previous episode, When the Levee Breaks, is probably one of my favourite episodes of the season, because it's when Sam goes on a demon blood detox, or is forced to, by Dean, with Bobby's help. And just kind of like the ideas of what they came up with. I think the episode was written by Sarah Gamble. She came up with some really interesting ideas about what being detoxed from demon blood would be like what cold turkey would look like, including Sam being psychically like thrown about the walls of a, you know, panic room, which is like a really cool bit of the episode, and various other things, and just constant hallucinations of terrible shit. Anyway, so that's Supernatural season 4.
Oh god, hang on, have we all been secretly detoxing from demon blood?
Well, I don't know, but you know what, I tweeted this morning about the fact that outside looked like it was from the Langoliers, Stephen King sort of book slash I think it was a TV adaptation in the 90s or something.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen an adaptation. It was that kind of level of fog. As I so because I've only been within about 3 miles of my house for the past 3 months, so I was like, are the Langoliers finally here for me? Sort of thing, because the fog outside the house was so thick and like all the countryside had disappeared. I was like, this is like something out of a freaking horror film. What did you feel like, Paul, this morning looking at?
Well, I mean, I knew that the roads were going to be okay.
Yeah, but did it not remind you of a Stephen King novel?
Not specifically Langoliers, no, but I mean, it happens sometimes. Sometimes the Shires disappear.
Sometimes the place looks like it's the middle of Silent Hill, you know? It's, what happens?
Is that a pyramid carrying a sword? What?
Isn't that normal? But doesn't he normally make a lot of noise because the sword's being dragged?
Yes, but I mean, it's mud out there, so might not make quite the same noise.
That's disconcerting. And you know what?
He gets a +2 to sneak.
And you know what? We do have an old school here in the village with a clock tower.
So one that I've not gone near and don't intend to.
Yeah, especially when it's foggy.
It's all good. It's all fine.
This is what 3 months of this leads to. Comparisons with horror games.
And lots of box setting. And
yeah. I mean, to be fair, me rewatching Supernatural is kind of like a way of life at this point. Just kind of happens every now and then. It's whether or not I succeed in getting to the end, because I don't always watch it when I exercise. Retro, anything else you've been up to?
Well, I have had a few more bits of tech in the post, I know.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Yeah. My most recent acquisition, I haven't had much of a chance to do anything with them because there are things that need to be done. But I recently got some cheap arcade boards in the post, which is nice. For anyone who doesn't know, the old arcade games of the 80s and 90s were generally running off one big PCB, which had the entire, computing power, RAM, ROMs, everything like that on the board. So the idea was you just switched it on and it would plug into a near universal harness called the JAMA harness, which was the Japanese amusement manufacturers marketing association, or something like that. But yeah, so all those big arcade games, they actually just run on one computer board.
I did not know that.
I will post some pictures up. Mm-hmm. Because I've managed to do some the boards I bought, I already own two from years back, but the boards I bought were sold as spares, repairs, or not working, unknown. So I literally have no idea. Well, up until yesterday when I was checking one of the boards, I had no idea what I bought. I got them for less than 10 quid a piece.
Oh, wow.
So I happen to think that's pretty good. But I did some sleuthing because, unfortunately, the auction, I won the three auctions I won, one for each, had photos up, but they weren't hugely high res. So I couldn't see, what some of the text said on the board, or, what some of the chips were, because that can help. But I happened to find a little bit of text just on the edge of one board, and it just said M Street - 6.
What did that mean?
I Googled it, and for once, Google actually gave me an answer. Which is, it's a Street Fighter II Championship Edition bootleg.
Wait, a bootleg?
Oh yeah, this was a thing.
Oh god.
In fact, there are games out there that, you know, because for the longest time it was, oh, bootlegs are worthless. And I, personally, I've never held to that because, yes, there's something to be said for saying, you know, you have like, you know, a Pac-Man board or a Space Invaders board or, you know, something like that. But when it comes to a bootleg, you know, it's not like, you know, you're buying a dodgy, you know, CD in the market where it is just a copy. In this case, what would often happen because the arcade companies were worried about their games being stolen because they were, in the end, software which ran on hardware. Mm. And they knew bootleggers were a thing. If they were selling their board for, you know, several hundred, you know, dollars, and if someone could work out what chips ran what the program was, because after all, you know, the code a lot of the time was not encrypted until later on, which, you know, I won't get into that much. But yeah, it was a battle between the arcade board manufacturers selling their games, people who would, you know, who could work out that they could copy the boards and sell them for, you know, a fraction of the price. Because after all, if you're running an arcade and if someone says, here, you can have, you know, game X, official, and it's, you know, like $800 for the board. And if someone else comes along and says, hey, we've got a copy of game X, which says it's the same thing and it plays the same, but also, you know, these other three, and you can have them all for $500.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And as it's turned out, some of these bootlegs are, you know, have come in handy because things like Capcom, who I think it's officially the number one selling game, you know, for an arcade board and dedicated cabinet, which is Street Fighter 2 and its variants. Hugely successful, which I have to admit, I've never been a huge fan of Street Fighter 2. It just, you know, didn't push my buttons. But of course, you know, they were in a constant rate. That was partly why they were, you know, while they were on a roll, they were pumping out these new versions. But also the bootleggers would do things like do speed hacks. So you could, you know, pull off different moves or, you know, play the game much faster. And so, you know, Capcom would release a Street Fighter 2, and then the bootleggers would release their version with, you know, like tweaks and hacks. People would like the things in the bootleg. Capcom would release a new version that had, say, you know, like a fast speed version or, you know.
Or like the, you know, turbo and all that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And it goes back to all the way to Pac-Man, where there are hacks. Well, for, you know, very short, condensed version, you know, of, you know, the history of, you know, things like Pac-Man and bootlegs. Pac-Man, the original Pac-Man, had one maze design. And it started off at a set speed, and it would get gradually faster. But one of the easiest things that the bootleggers could do is, you know, to sell would be, hey, here's a version of Pac-Man, but it's got a different maze. It's harder. So in other words, you'll earn more because people will lose their, you know, their credit. They'll lose their quarters, you know, faster while playing it.
Yeah.
So Miss Pac-Man was released with different mazes, more or less as a direct answer to the bootleggers that were creating, you know, different mazes and selling them on. And there were all, you know, all these kinds of things. And, you know, there are speed hacks, maze hacks, and, you know, different things, you know, tweaks with the code to do this, that, and the other. But, yeah. So, you know, it surprises me, but it makes sense that, you know, not many people know about, you know, if you're outside of emulation, if you're outside of MAME, and if you're outside of, you know, collecting, you don't think there is such a thing as bootleg versions of these arcade games.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know, it doesn't quite, you know, compute. Because after all, these are dedicated bits of hardware. But yeah, in this case, I know I've got a bootleg copy of Street Fighter II Turbo, you know, or Street Fighter II Championship Edition, which is, you know, specific because there are so many versions.
Mm.
I know that I've got a board which is very closely related because it's got the same processor. It's got the same, you know, design to it, but it's got different chips on there. So I don't know whether that's another version of Street Fighter 2 or not, but yeah, I have no idea, but what I'll have to do is I will have to repair my arcade machine. Because, you know, for those who don't know, I have an arcade machine.
What is it in desperate need of that it needs repairing?
Well, basically, an arcade machine is, you know, the big wooden thing itself with, yeah, you know, the glass front and, you know, the control panel and an RGB monitor inside, mostly.
Mm.
RGB monitor. And mine can be either vertical or horizontal, but basically, because these were left on for so long, the tube is tired, as they call it. Last time I had the arcade monitor running, it was slightly tinted to the red and had a sort of, if anything was too bright, it slightly flared.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, I know there are ways to turn the different color channels down, so I may be able to get it, you know, looking better. But, yeah, there's all kinds of things that you can do to either replace the whole screen or just replace the tube. But yeah, that's going to be a whole other project. But what I want to do, because I've got a TV sitting in my arcade cabinet at the moment and the controls are not connected to anything.
Mm.
So I'm going to have to take the TV out, put the arcade monitor back in. These are heavy things.
Okay.
Because, you know, these are like 1980s.
Yeah.
Early 1990s, dedicated TV monitors. So I've got to get, swap that back in, and then I've got to get it hooked back up. And yeah, it's basically because an arcade cabinet has what I mentioned before, which was the jammer harness. It's like a universal harness.
Yeah.
The idea is once you've plugged into that, the controls are wired in. So, the coin door will accept credits. You can do, press one player, press two player. All three buttons work, all the directions work, and it will send an RGB signal to the monitor. Now, yeah, I can do a quick swap of things back and have a slightly crap picture, but at least I'll be able to see if the game's run. I already know there's at least one loose wire on one of the boards, so it won't work.
Okay.
Without repair, and it probably needs some, various other technical TLC, but yeah. So I got three new boards to add to my Thunder Dragon 2 and my Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, because stupid censorship of the late 80s,
yeah,
early 90s. But yeah, those are the two boards that I had up until now. But so now I have five arcade boards, and I only have a vague clue of what the difference is. So, adventure.
It does sound fun. I'd be interested to see when you manage to get it to work. I've seen some videos of it.
I will tweet out some pictures. Sweet. Mostly so I can say, look at this, and also, what is it?
Hmm? Paul, is there anything else you've been up to?
I mean, you're pointing me on the notes towards Kim's Convenience, so presumably you want to talk about that.
Yeah. But I want you to lead it.
You want me to lead it? Why?
Because it's something you've been up to as well. Aside from like writing D&D campaigns.
Are you worried that I've not been doing anything? Because I have actually been doing stuff.
Okay, I will briefly mention Kim's Convenience, also on Netflix, to the extent that
charity.
Due to season 2, we may have ended up buying a
massager.
A massager.
A back massager.
A back massager. Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Not one of the ones you'd want to use for any other purposes, because it's too unwieldy for that. However,
goodness.
Yeah. However, it is. Yeah, they did an episode on it, and I was like, because I like occasionally going for like actual massages when there isn't a global pandemic on, and thus
with those times, yeah.
Yeah, and thus have been missing out on stuff like that. And I saw it, and they, okay, maybe that one, this one episode of season two of Kim's Convenience about this lovely Korean family who's like, they've got, I think they've got a daughter that's like, would you class if you sort of first generation, second generation Korean? So she was, she grew up in Toronto. And they own a convenience store in Toronto. And it's just about their lives and their friends and stuff. Anyway, massage her. And I was like, you know what? That looks like a really good idea. I wonder if anywhere like sells anything like that, that I could get like in the next day or so. Turns out certain chain does. And I ordered it and I picked it up and I've been using it about every other day. And it's pretty good, but you can only use it for about 15 minutes at a time. Anyway, Kim's Convenience may or may not be a secret way of getting people to buy massages.
But
whilst also being quite amusing and lighthearted.
Which is good.
Yes.
I think we need that.
So if you want something that's just kind of generally like a bit fun and chill and Canadian, but Korean-Canadian, Canadian-Korean, Kim's Convenience, Netflix is the place to be. The family also has a son, but he's like the black sheep of the family. So he his name is Dirt, if you speak it in the convenience store, apparently. For reasons you will find if you watch, find out if you watch the series. So he's not terrible, terrible. Also been still trying to watch some DS9. We're still on season two. My ability to watch DS9 got hammered by the fact that I couldn't do anything with my both my hands for part of the week, because I like doing stuff whilst I'm watching TV. And I hurt my shoulder last week somehow. And I couldn't knit whilst watching stuff or like game whilst watching stuff. So it was a bit like, yeah, no. But anyway, so we're still trying to put on with DS9 season two. Oh, what was the one episode I really found interesting?
What happened in it?
I'm trying to think. It's all the blur. Oh, the one with the, there was a Ferengi who pretended to be male.
Ah, yes.
Ah, yes, yeah.
That episode was fun. And just,
surprising how fun the Ferengi episodes are, actually.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that Dax seemed very accepting of the fact that the female Ferengi he was in disguise, who really liked Quark, hadn't originally clicked that she was female, and seemed accepting of the idea that it could be a guy that liked Quark a lot, which I thought was quite... That they managed to slip that into the episode was actually quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, further, the character of Dax is kind of like...
a bisexual symbol at this point.
Or pan, maybe.
Or trans.
Yeah, as well.
As I've seen referenced. Because there is an absolutely awesome picture I've seen, you know, go around at times, and I've tweeted it out as well. Which was, you know, Curzon, you know, my brother. And he goes, actually, I'm Dax now. And says, Dax, you know, my wonderful sister. Oh, you know, something like that. Mm. But it's just, you know, they absolutely accept that, you know, it's the same but different.
I think they do it really well.
Yeah, Dax is... see, DS9, you said about the, you know, the Ferengi. Up until DS9, the Ferengi were, yeah, they weren't well regarded. They were, you know, like a comedy species.
Mm.
They were, you know, a little bit of an embarrassment when they'd, you know, crop up, because it would always be the, oh, God. You know, like there's a next-gen episode of... you know, where there's supposed to be a stable wormhole, because, you know, part of the Star Trek thing, you know, stable wormholes are rare. And I've got the Ferengi try dirty tricks, because to have a stable wormhole would be, you know, an incredible boon to business, being able to move from one location to another.
Hmm.
And they turn up in Voyager.
Yeah.
As a, you know, a little side effect, because it turns out that it's only one side of the wormhole which is stable. So when they go through against everyone's advice, of course they are lost, because when the wormhole appears again, it's not in the same place.
Yeah.
Although, but, doesn't it become, in the Next Gen episode, doesn't it become destabilized at both ends after that point?
I think it might.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Been watching.
But it's nice when you have a series which, they find a way to explore a species, like Trek did Klingons to a large degree.
Yeah.
Mm. DS9 did, the Ferengi and a few other, species.
That's the thing, isn't it? DS9 actually gave the other species some really good nuances.
Mm.
Yeah.
That you don't really kind of get with TNG very much.
Certainly not with Voyager.
Yeah. Because it kind of has to deal with them.
Yeah.
Whereas in TNG, it could be, you're only here for a week, piss off.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Klingon, therefore you're constantly angry and want to fight everybody. Wait. Surely every Klingon can't be like that.
So, DS9, Animal Crossing New Horizons, I will say that there was a point last week where bells were 600... Well, sorry, not bells... Turnips were 624 bells on my island, which is a fucking high price. Like, you don't get prices that high very often on anyone's island. And I ended up...
I know that's an impressive price.
Yeah. So I opened up in certain channels a Dodo code and basically had a whole load of people come to my island and make optional donations of either bells or the next mile tickets, and made a fortune. I think I made over 1 million bells. In an hour, just letting people. But it was, the main issue was trying to get people to go through quickly. So I had to fence off a load of my island and basically just give people a path between my airport and my shop.
Yeah, so go on. Just go over there, do the thing, out, go on.
Yeah, and obviously.
No dawdling.
And some people would dawdle too long trying to say, thank you. And it was like, but it's like, this price is only available for a limited amount of time. You need to move on, please, dear Lord.
It's like, thank you is nice, but just go on.
Yeah. That happened. That's my big Animal Crossing news. Oh, and I moved my house in it. I've gone from being in the center of town near the town hall to a hilltop right at the back. Inconvenient for travel, however, I feel like I've got my own little mansion up on the hill now, because I've got the final upgrade to the house with the basement. So, and I have also started playing, because I bought it last year, though I'm not, I know it's happening, I think, in the States, but the 2018 Spider-Man game. I think I'm not sure if it's on offer at the moment or it's about to be one of the, PS Plus games of the month sort of things. Anyway, I picked it up cheap during Black Friday last year and I started playing it this week. Managed to make it through the opening mission and the starting of learning about side quests. Definitely getting Batman Arkham series flashbacks in terms of the combat. I'm not sure which is harder to follow. The on-screen instructions for stuff like how to navigate the city in terms of how to do web slinging and that, or it trying to tell me how to fight.
Mm.
Like I'm having real issues with how it basically gives you instructions for how to do things.
I think because I can't remember, a while ago now, there was a video on why certain Nintendo games are actually really, really good with instructions when it comes to buttons, because it actually shows you not just which button to press, but also where on the gamepad it would be as well. And you don't really kind of get that sense with just looking at the hood for Spider-Man.
I mean, there is a moves list thing, but it doesn't really kind of go into how to navigate the city and stuff, and so my web slinging technique is probably a bit shit in trying to navigate. I'm going to keep at it though and play it a bit more. I'm playing it on the first level that apparently gives you a challenge, but also I told it no quick time events. That was a nice thing to be able to choose. It actually had an options thing to be like, oh, do you want quick time events? I'm like, no, fuck off. Nobody wants quick time events. Nobody.
I noticed in and this is an accessibility issue as well.
Hmm.
I noticed in the latest Gears on Xbox One and presumably on PC as well, that you had the option that, you know, say, you know, if you're pinned by an enemy in certain games, you hammer a button.
Yeah.
Mm.
In this, you had an option to just turn that to a hold.
Ooh, okay. That's a lot.
And I thought, that's such a simple idea, but it's excellent that they did that. And I've got one or two friends who are colorblind. And they still, to this day, how are they not making colorblind mode? You know, versions in games. Well, how are they, you know, making things where it, you know, it depends on, you know, seeing a certain color, which, you know, a good portion of the population aren't going to be able to bloody see, or at least, you know, see badly. It just, you know, these kinds of things, it's nice. So, you know, as you say, you know, quick time events, okay, but, you know, come on, they can be a little bit tiresome.
Yeah, I feel like I've done my dues with them. I just, if I've got the I mean, this is the first game where I've actually had the option to be like, nope. But, I, you know, having that option more widely available is good. Because it's not, it's a, I think the last game that really frustrated me with them was probably Resident Evil 6. And I know that's a few years ago now, but that's how long since I've played a game that massively relied on them for huge chunks.
To be fair, part of the problem with Resident Evil 6's quick time events is, one, is that basically you have, if you're playing cooperatively, you have two people
trying to do it,
and all it takes is for one of them to fail. Two, there's way too many of them and way too many sequences of them as well. Yeah. And three, also, I'm pretty sure that some of the timings were off on the instructions compared to the inputs.
Yeah.
So it would all of a sudden go, okay, press X, and by the time you've actually gone, oh, okay, and then pressed X, it was all done.
Game over.
Yeah, you had to be pressing X before it told you to press X. And it's just like, no.
What one of the issues I have with, you know, something being so timing critical like that is it was kind of fine when we were using CRTs because they were, you know, pretty instant.
Mm.
Whereas it's rare now to find, in fact, you find displays and monitors and TVs and such that make a big deal about, you know, how little lag they have. Think of how many people who will be using their TV, you know, like, you know, old TVs or, you know, whatever, that have, in some cases, several frames of lag.
Hmm.
So that can, you know, completely throw you off. I remember seeing a comparison between a CRT and an early LCD, TV, and the lag on it, and it was about a third of a second.
Ooh.
Which doesn't sound like much, but it can really throw critical timings off.
That's actually quite interesting because obviously one of the major things in terms of TVs and game consoles is the heightening of the frames per second. So it's like CRTs, I think they were mostly kind of, well, in the UK, was it like near on 25 frames?
Was it 25 or am I thinking? Off. 25 full frames, but if they were interlaced or, as they call it, 240p, which, you know, old consoles, you know, they were, you know, like dead on 50.
Mm. And now we have, like, you know, TVs that can do, like, 100 frames per second and whatnot. And it's like, what's the point if you're going to have lag like that?
Mm.
Yeah. And, of course, part of the reason is it's supposed to try and eliminate lag. But it's also about eliminating smearing artifacts or, you know, maybe refresh. So, you know, stuff like HDR, and there's all kinds of things like that. And of course, remember, there are TVs out there that you cannot turn off that smoothing effect.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't turn it off.
Oh, yeah. I've used one where there was not any option in the settings. And, you know, trust me, I went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and there was not a single setting anywhere that would turn off the film mode.
That's not fun.
Eek.
Aside from playing video games, I've also been reading two different things. I've been reading The Art of Intrusion by, Kevin D. Mitnick and William L. William L. something, sorry, which is a cybersecurity book. It's kind of dry, but not, and it's like, it came out in the early noughts. And there's a couple of embedded examples, but a lot of it's sort of just general network security examples of just like big hacking and cracking instances that happened in like the 90s, one in the 80s, 90s and early noughts, and just like looking at confessions and then ways that, like, obviously if you're in charge of cybersecurity, you could mitigate it. And while it is obviously, this book's almost coming out, I think it must be like 15 years old now or something, and some of the cases it's dealing with is like over 20, load of it's still relevant. And it's crazy, like, while some of the bits of tech may have changed, the various techniques for like finding vulnerabilities and then exploiting them still relevant, especially stuff like social engineering.
Yeah.
And stuff from physical penetration as well. It's like,
yeah, it's just, oh god.
Yeah, so that's a fun read, and I've almost finished reading that. I'm on, like, I think the last chapter or the second to last chapter, and I started reading, I think I've mentioned it before, but I can't remember, Small Favor, which is one of the Dresden Files books. A new one has come out, I think, during lockdown, and I keep getting ads for it on Facebook. I was like, I can't click on that and look at that because it's just spoilers with a side of spoilers. Which is fun. And I'm slowly getting into it. But I may have over Dresden Files myself earlier this year, / over Christmas. So I'm finding it a little slow going. But I want to finish it. So it's fairies again. Fairies. Bad news.
There's a fairy fighting the Untamed.
You know what? There's a fairy fight in Supernatural.
True.
Season 6. Sam,
I bet you know which episode number.
Not necessarily episode number. I think it's, is it a Clapham if you believe? I think it's called. But basically, Solar Sam goes to a town where there's some stuff going on. Turns out it's fairies. And one of the head fairies is the actor that plays the Dr. MMH, medical MH hologram in Voyager.
Ron Picardo.
Yeah. Ooh. I believe he's the lead fairy. If I remember rightly. I think it's him. I can't safely check at the moment because everyone's phones keeps interfering with the microphone tonight. But I think it's him. Or somebody who looks like it's his brother from another mother, if not. But yeah, so that's me. So have you been doing D&D campaigns, Paul? Are you about to, this week, after we've recorded this episode by a couple of days, like, torture like everybody whilst you continue your campaign?
Why do you say torture?
Well, because obviously we're all going to die a horrible, horrible death, aren't we? That's what all DMs seem to always tease, is that they're just going to kill all their players today.
No, I'm going to try and tell a good story.
Oh, good.
You're going to a small local town. It's called the Abattoir. No? Yeah?
All I know is there's been furious keyboard clacking going on in his corner of the living room, plus he plots and plans and plots some more and then plans some more and then writes some more and, ooh, devious planning. And I think there's a massive map involved as well that apparently you had to make room on your computer for, because Photoshop was like, this file's this big.
Yeah.
Makes space.
My hard drive on my laptop was kind of being like, by the way, you ran out of memory. Sorry. And I was like, what? Okay, well, let's try and expand the memory. And it was like, I can't, not without shutting off. Okay, can you save it, please? No, I can't. I don't have the memory.
Is this where the whole you copying some old stuff onto an external hard drive thing?
Yes.
Okay.
And then it was like, suddenly, oh, I have a bit of memory. It's like, okay, now I'm going to save, going to close the program, then...
make some more memory?
No, I was basically, there's this thing called scratch disks.
Oh, yeah.
The idea with them is that when you run out of RAM, you can use an external hard drive
mm-hmm.
or device in order basically offload some of the kind of memory requirements from that the RAM can't hold. So I managed to kind of hook up an external hard drive and basically use that as a scratch disk.
Is this Photoshop file of hugeness done with now? Have you finished adding detail to it?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because I
have
was...
Have you actually exported it then?
Yeah, I believe so.
How big was the export?
Oh,
he's going to check. Don't accidentally close the recording session for the podcast.
Let's see.
Oh, he's going into the files. He's going in. Oh, it looks very detailed. As a thumbnail.
Oh, God.
Which is it, Paul?
Well, I mean, bear in mind that this is a straightforward picture file, so JPEG.
Yeah, how big is the JPEG?
It is looking like it's just over 2 megabytes.
Oh, well, that's an export, but how many pixels?
Well, its dimensions are 3,164 by 2,068.
I think the issue Photoshop had was the number of layers involved.
Well, yeah.
Because it was the complexity of the file rather than the actual pixel dimensions.
Well, yeah. It's, because...
it's a map.
Yeah.
It has detail.
Yeah. And, like, when you're importing stuff from, like, external files as well, and you're kind of doing those as smart images so that, basically they pretty much have their own file, but it's located, in the file. Oh, file in file.
Speaking of the practical elements of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
So we're currently comboing on Roll20 for maps and character pieces and Skype for conversation because Roll20 seems to be absolutely appalling with audio.
And somehow Skype, even though it doesn't appear to work at the moment for Nerds Assemble with one other person, it's somehow able to cope with 9 other people.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, one or two of them are using the same, PC. But
so,
yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
So basically, we haven't really got a decent all-in-one solution yet to the whole online Dungeons & Dragons thing. And
quite frankly, I think by the time we find a better solution, we'll be able to, meet up in person.
Because part of the issue is, like, it'd be all right if you just needed speech, but really you do need to be able to altogether view, like, a map area and stuff so that you can figure out how things... Like, we've tried playing without any maps on a different campaign for like combat and stuff, and it actually gets really messy really fast. You just don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and I think because there's also no kind of visual aids as well, it's a case of it's kind of difficult to picture in your head about where things are positioned in the battlefield and whatnot, and it's like, oh, am I actually behind this thing or am I in front of it? If I run up to this creature, am I within range to attack, or all sorts of like stuff like that.
But hopefully our time to game on Friday is going to be less than the previous weeks, because we may have also had to do tech support for brother.
Not to mention taking you to the hospital.
Oh yeah, there was a hospital trip.
Not coronavirus related, thankfully. Coronavirus.
Don't want to go into more information than that, but there was an MRI involved. It was fun, and it sounded like I got them to play Queens of the Stone Age Songs for the Deaf album, and there were points quite frequently where the MRI machine was in time with what music I could hear just about over its loudness. And then there were points where the machine sounded like cyberpunk-inspired industrial electronica.
Okay.
I'm just saying that if you sampled the sounds of an MRI machine onto synthesizer or something and then started trying to play music, it would work.
So, yeah, that
someone
was...
Someone will have.
So, yeah, that was like the first session where we had all that going on beforehand.
So we're hoping...
So basically, I just ended up with like a scene and then we had to kind of call it a night. Yeah. Which is really frustrating.
I mean, to be fair, I think the tech issues lasted an hour prior to that point.
Oh, yeah, probably more than that, to be honest.
It was not all my hospital visit. A load of tech.
But considering we had to go to the hospital, then we had to actually have something to eat as well. And then we could start doing stuff. Yes, no.
But you know what?
What?
You know what?
What?
I want to like Roll 20, and yet I really can't at the moment. It's frustrating. Like, because obviously it's got paid option, and it's like, I have yet to see why anyone would pay for it. Did you subscribe in the end or not?
Yes, just to kind of see.
Are you going to cancel that subscription?
Possibly. Probably cancel it once we're back to, you know, running it as normal.
Okay.
But the thing is that
it was like, oh, is it going to like boost the connection if somebody subscribed, especially if it's the DM? And give like some preferential treatment? No. Nothing like that by the looks of things. So there's like...
I think there are certain character classes or species that are under lock and key.
Yeah, there's that. But you'd think actually on the technical perspective that if you're actually bothering to pay, the main thing, the connectivity element would be better, but not.
Oh, you.
I mean, I think when it comes to like the map stuff and whatnot, you do get like a lot more kind of options for the subscription. So I think some of the assets that you don't have to create yourself, because you can import your own kind of files, obviously, because, you know, map making and character making and whatnot, you can do that, and you can assign like your character tokens to each individual player who can then move their own tokens and stuff like that. So that's, you know, quite nifty. It's a little bit of a, like... Oh, you're doing that. Okay, that's a bit weird, but okay. In terms of like the file structure of it, you have to kind of upload it, and then rather than just kind of dragging it to a folder to, you know, it's you kind of have to open it and then drag it. Yeah.
Are you saying that the user experience could be a lot better?
Yes. If it kind of mirrored more kind of like a Windows type operating system,
because that doesn't even sound like it follows Linux logic. So, like,
probably not, to be honest. But yeah,
jeez.
So you've got obviously different layers and whatnot from just kind of going from the DM angle here. You've got different layers where you can have the map, you have the tokens and whatnot, and then you have like any kind of drawings or any kind of, say for example, you're doing like an area of effect spell. You can have that on a separate layer as well, so that means that you can kind of flip between the layers and see what's, you know, visible where and whatnot, and making sure that, you know, nobody can kind of move the map underneath the characters or anything. But yeah, it's quite a interesting system so far, and we didn't utilize it in the first
session.
That's one. First session, because we kind of only had the opportunity to really do like a scene, which was trying to kind of set up for the next thing, which is what's going to happen presumably in this session. And I say presumably because I know what dealing with nine people is going to be like.
It is an ambitious player amount.
Yes. It's obviously first time doing it for that many people. It's only my second time actually DMing session-wise.
No, third.
Third?
With us, it's second, but in general, it's your third session being a DM.
How so?
because of the game with the other people here at home that we started right before lockdown.
Well, we had one session.
Yeah, we had one session, but you've also had this one, but then tomorrow, well, Friday, you'll have had three.
After tomorrow, right,
after Friday, yeah, you'll have had three.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what, guys? I think that's all we've got time for.
I have also been doing like stuff like, you know, gardening type stuff as well.
Oh, okay.
So it's not been just purely D&D planning.
You know, are you trying not to kill plants at the moment, is what you're saying?
To be honest, isn't that the description of gardening? It's trying not to kill plants.
I suppose, yeah.
Well, it is in a way. Well, trying not to kill the right ones.
Yeah, because you've got the weeds.
That is true. I have been clearing out like the brambles and whatnot from the path because that was really overgrown. Yeah, out there we've got like a couple of nice, you know, kind of like ferns and, you know, flowery plants and whatnot. But also we've got a fair amount of herbs.
And, are you turning into a plant geek?
A plant geek.
Medicinal herbs.
Yeah. Medicinal herbs. but I don't have any medicinal herbs.
Are chives medicinal? Mint can be medicinal.
See, the chives, when
I'm just doing air quotes around.
See, the chives, they were kind of pretty much stood up on end, as it were, to begin with.
And then
with.
They met the flat-leaf parsley.
Yeah, and then they're just like, you know, I wanna taste what this other plant's kind of having.
Flat-leaf parsley has now been left by itself.
Yes, I've had to, because, you know, I got planters which you can plant, like, two separate kind of, well, plants in. And then I was like, okay, yeah, that's all good. Hold on, one of these isn't doing so well. Let's research this. Google, blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay. So one of them requires, you know, lots of lovely sunlight. The other requires not to be left in some direct sunlight because otherwise it will burn its leaves somehow. It's like, oh, okay, I better separate these then.
So you've been having fun times and your Google search history has suddenly become a lot greener.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And, you know, we haven't actually... I know that you've taken some of the mint previously.
Yeah.
That we've had.
We haven't used any of the other herbs yet.
No. So that's going to be like
garden mint is quite nice.
Mm. So we're going to have to kind of at some point, you know, kind of...
Well, basil.
Sorry. Air quotes, mint.
Mint. Okay, that is all we've got time for in this episode.
After leaving me till last, you cut me off.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Ouch.
You're going off topic, technically.
Going off topic? This entire episode was meant to be what have we been up to, and gardening was one of those things. I am entirely on topic. Thank you very much.
Is she going to be telling us you've been golfing?
No, I haven't, because that hasn't happened.
Yet.
What the hell?
Long swing.
I mean, I've tried, you know, like, crazy golf a bit and
no stop,
but I mean that's I just can't quite get the hang of it.
Shush.
Well, saying that when we did go with Tim,
not the pitch and putt,
yeah,
oh god,
and
flashbacks
it was like I was a bit, you know, bad, and then I kind of got to the point where my first hit was hitting further than everybody else, than me standing around waiting like half an hour for everybody to catch up to me. And then I would struggle to actually get it in the hole after that.
Right. That is all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodbye from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at emkingma. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at nerdspodcast. Episodes are available to listen to on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we're on Facebook as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Another reminder that stuff is slowly creaking onwards to actually having a new website. So if you notice a disruption in service and we haven't posted about it, and you know, we'll probably post about it on social media before we do anything major, but it could happen. It could happen. We're also aware of the fact that FeedBurner, which feeds our RSS, which goes out to the previously mentioned platforms, like Apple Podcasts and that, is lagging behind by something like 12 or more hours, which it shouldn't be. And that's one of the reasons why we're moving the website.
Because the RSS lag.
Yeah, so that we can actually have our own RSS. So, yeah. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Did I already say Twitter?
Maybe.
Twitters.
Mint.
Parsley.